good afternoon. Today is Friday, June the 21st, 176th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon is, you want president as your title?
Might as well.
Or just board member?
I'm president. Might as well. Tell it. It's the summer solstice.
Yeah.
June 21st, longest day of the year.
Does it, that's right. It affects tides. Tides are water. It's the connection that Alderaan has with the Humble Bay Municipal Water District. Yeah, right. How was that for a stretch? This afternoon, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about state water policy. One, does one exist? Two, is it palatable? Three, is it one that we can afford? And then what does it look like if it gets fully implemented or some of the changes that might be being discussed at this point? All kinds of stuff around water when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 313. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Alderaan Laird from the Water District. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from William Hazlitt. Prosperity is a great teacher, adversity a greater. I hate these quotes. Alderaan, I guess stepping back, we've heard an awful lot about energy policies over the years. Lack thereof, state level, at the federal level. Is there a federal water policy, or is that something that is just kind of left up to the local jurisdictions, i.e. the state, from the federal perspective, and they kind of back away and say, you know, other than national waters and international waters and military with the Coast Guard and things like that, water's pretty much a state's issue, right? And back away.
Yeah, it's pretty totally a state issue. You know, the state owns and controls the use of all the water. You know, in California, you get a water right. You know, you don't get to own the water. You get the permission to use it. And so, the feds don't. I mean, they have federal water agencies like the Bureau of Reclamation that develop infrastructure and deliver water under contract to agricultural customers. But the state governs the use of water.
How much involvement does the EPA have? And some of the regulatory components, or are those also kind of default to the state?
No, the EPA, through the Clean Water Act, that's the dominant law of the land as far as water quality. And then the state has implements the Federal Clean Water Act through the regional boards where they regulate discharge to the waters of the state.
I know it's kind of a stupid question, but hey, who better to ask it? Who has clean water? Or what is clean water?
Clean water would be water that doesn't make you sick.
Yeah. So it's not to be confused with pure.
No, I don't think that. In fact, reverse osmosis, where you put water through a membrane, you know, to purify it, they actually end up adding minerals into the final product because there's no taste when there's nothing in the water.
It's almost like a neutral.
It's a neutral thing. So, yeah, we don't go for necessarily pure water. We go for water that doesn't contain any harmful elements that would make somebody sick. I mean, that's the whole...
That'd be a longer title for the act, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be a lot. Clean Water Act is a lot simpler way to go.
Yeah, Water That Doesn't Make People Sick Act.
Yeah. You know, 100 years ago, people used to get very sick from drinking water because the water you drank would get contaminated with sewage and things like that. You know, cholera and all those were huge plagues and stuff. So we take it for granted that when you turn the tap on, you're not taking your life into your hands. But
or also the flip side is that water was pure all the time and it's just been screwed up. Hey, well, maybe it was and maybe it's not. A lot of the poisons and things are natural products too.
Other natural products, we just have a tendency to concentrate and focus things and dump them in on a much more accelerated rate than what they naturally find. But
is it safe to drink from creeks?
No, it's not. There's various pathogens that are in the water that animals carry and things like that, and you can get pretty sick. And I do backpacking, and it's pretty common in this day and age. Nobody drinks straight from the creek. You have a water pump, and you fill up your water bottle, from the creek or a spring, but you need to pump it through a filter. Otherwise, you're going to get some of these pathogens, and you can get pretty sick.
Like a coffee filter? No, or is there a special?
The ones we use are just hand pumps. And they have a hose that goes down into the stream, and you hand pump it, sucks water up, forces it through a carbon filter, and then it goes into your water bottle.
So it's kind of like an aquarium.
Yeah, it's kind of like a portable aquarium pump.
When did it change?
That, I think, back in the early 1980s is when we started getting these pathogens. I think we were tied with bears, and people started getting really sick, from being out there. And ever since about the 80s, when I was doing Forest Service contracts, that's when you were told you had don't drink from the stream any longer. And it spread up even into the high country. I always thought if you went up in the Trinity Alps, it would be safe.
Yeah, get up high in the snowpack area.
Yeah, but, even there, I think that everybody that goes backpacking now just learns, from the beginning that you have to pump your water, filter your water.
So I guess I'm pretty stupid then, huh? I mean, that's what I,
dated.
Well, okay, dated could be, aged. That sounds much nicer than mentally deficient. But yeah, I remember you tubing on the Trinity.
Yeah.
No big deal. Stomping around in the creeks and stuff. You always drank upstream from where you were stomping just because of all the mud and stuff you'd throw up. Things change.
Things have changed, yeah. Even in the wilderness area, you've got to watch what you're doing.
Yeah. That's somehow disappointing, disenchanting.
Worse.
But I guess things changed. Now, have the readings at the intakes for the water district, have they changed also during that 30, 35 years? Is this stuff that is detectable or trackable?
Well, the rainy collectors that we use in the Mad River, we actually collect the water from about 60 to 80 feet below the bed of the river. So we got a lot of filtration going on before we get the water. But then we disinfect the water with chlorine. Just to make sure that there's no pathogens.
Just double check it.
It's required by law that we have to.
That would be the Clean Water Don't Let You Get Sick Act?
Yes.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:19. We'll be back with more from Alderon Laird.
Sunshine for Humboldt. Recently, the Eureka Heritage Society named Bill Hole its Preservationist of the Year. For 17 years, he's led the renowned Historic Preservation and Restoration Technology Program at College of the Redwoods. Now, however, he's been told the college may not be able to afford to offer his classes next school year. While the program has a shortfall based solely on enrollment, Mr. Hole says that's not the full story. It's brought in more money than it costs to run, over $1 million from donated supplies, equipment and training sites, state grants and training agreements. He adds, "The type of training we do, integrating construction, rebuilding and revitalizing neighborhoods, is significant to Humboldt County. The intensive hands-on training prepares his students to fill the demand for specialists to work on restorations locally and throughout the country. See, our administrators should take off their green eye shades and see the big picture. This program is a valuable asset to our economy and culture." Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit association dedicated to the betterment of our communities.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:23. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Alderon Laird from the Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District. Alderon, the state water policy, if we can kind of get away from the federal a little bit, what is the biggest surprise that people have about or the existence of a state water policy?
Do we have a state water policy? That's a good question. In 2009, there was a water legislation package that was put together and passed, and Governor Schwarzenegger signed it into law, and it codified a concept, which I guess you could say is the state water policy today, which is called the Co-Equal Goals, which was assuring water reliability and ecosystems restoration, that the serving both of those purposes are co-equal. One's not a higher priority than the other. It's pretty much Delta-centric focused is what that's working on.
Protect Sacramento?
Well, not so much Sacramento as protect the Delta, the ecosystem of the Delta, while you're running water through the Delta to go to Southern California and the coast.
Well, it's interesting because here, I mean, if water is a fixed or limited resource, okay, forgetting the amount of rainfall change, if it's going to development or if it's going to the natural channels, if you will, somebody's going to lose. You just can't say, okay, we're going to make the natural to the same level it was naturally. And at the same time, we got 40 million people in the state of California. We're going to be drawing water off to that also. I mean, how
do you balance?
Yeah, without a bunch of desalinization plants.
I think that what we've been learning is that we have not been using water very efficiently, and we haven't really been paying the true cost of what it takes to produce that water and move it from point A to point B.
You're not going to talk about Eel River and Russian River water, are you?
We could if you want to, but
No. That's my one opportunity for environmental terrorism that I would stand right behind.
We haven't been using the water very efficiently. You know, for the last 20 years, I believe, you know, the Los Angeles area, you know, has grown quite a bit in population, but they're consuming the same amount of water. It's because they've increased their efficiency on how they use it. They're conserving it more. And we can do a lot more than what we're doing even now. And in a sense, you know, every time you increase the efficiency of using by 10% or so, it's just the same as building another reservoir. Instead, you're finding new water. You're just not wasting it anymore. And so,
does it get into some of the discussions, do they get into things like regulating agricultural products? I mean, a rice paddy certainly is going to be a whole lot different than a walnut orchard.
Right, right.
Same property, same California water, hugely different consumption
levels.
Which
one's more appropriate to be using?
Well, or is it appropriate to have the regulation?
Well, they're not regulating the use. They're regulating the water. And so if
let's make it even more close to home, wine,
right,
versus
alfalfa.
Yeah, because wine certainly sucks up a whole bunch of water,
not as much as alfalfa, so
right,
you're paying for it by the acre foot, and you're growing alfalfa, even if you're getting two or three harvests of it, you know, you're putting a lot of water out there, and so it costs a lot more money to produce that, whereas if you're doing vineyards, you know, they get by on a lot less water. But the trade-off is that alfalfa is an annual crop. So if you don't get water next year, you're not out of luck. But if you have a vineyard, you have a long-term investment. You got to have water every year.
Yeah.
And so that's a decision that the property owner makes. And obviously that's where a lot of the pressure comes to maintain the reliability of being able to guarantee the same amount of water.
Water contracts are interesting things. I know we're starting to hear, I guess, the equivalent of a water contract that the district has. Okay, but that's a little bit different than if I'm going to contract with you guys for a certain amount of water or acre feet or however it's measured annually. How does the agricultural communities contract for water, or do they just open up the pipe and they pay as the meter spins?
It depends on where they get their water from. If they get their water from the Federal Central Valley Project, then they have a contract with Bureau of Reclamation. And then depending on what type of water year it is, you know, whether it's a dry or a normal year, and what position you are in the line of contractors, you know, the first contractors get their water first, the newest contractors get their water last. The Bureau of Reclamation decides how much water they're going to deliver to you based on, you know, what type of water supply they have.
So it doesn't float the price, it controls the volume. Well, that's kind of a sneaky way to do it, isn't it?
It's an interesting way to do it.
How'd you like to be like the guy that just signed and then starting to try to develop a business, and you throw your money against that, and all of a sudden they tell you, oh, by the way,
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope you like desert.
Yeah. You know, the water contractors and water districts and all of the people that get their water, whether from the state project, which is another contracting mode, or whether they have a local water district, they do a lot of water trading. I mean, they are masters at water deal negotiations. They're trading so much water because everything's plumbed together. And so, you know, the water that maybe is in Lodi or up in Chico or whatnot could satisfy the needs, maybe somebody in Imperial Valley, by cutting deals. And they forego raising, you know, corn in Chico, and somebody can get the water down in Imperial. So,
well, we'll be talking about that then when we come back. KINS News and Information Time, it's 3:30.
Value and selection in new furniture and appliances are just the beginning of the reasons why more North Coast customers like you shop at Burns Furniture. This month, you'll find exceptional prices on the new iComfort mattress sleep system and sale prices on Englander mattresses. It's June, so recliners are on sale, and you'll want to see what's new on the four big floors of furniture and appliances at Burns. Get free delivery from Trinidad to Scotia when you buy at Burns Furniture, 5th and G Streets, downtown Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with the president of the Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District Board and duly elected.
Yes.
Yes, Alderon Laird. Alderon, before the break, you were talking a little bit about water trading, that contracts are let, okay, but that doesn't mean that that's going to be the end consumer for those products. How does that one play out, or is there the equivalent of either, I guess the nice way to say it would be a secondary market, rather than a black market for water?
It's there's some people that have water contracts, you know, who are farmers that can turn a pretty profit by not planting crops and turning around and selling it either to Los Angeles or San Diego, who have water portfolios, and they're going all around the state trying to line up contracts, you know, for different seasons or different times of delivery. I mean, they'll pay a farmer just sort of an insurance policy. We'll give you so much money a year just to know we have access to your water if we need it. If we don't need it, we'll let you know if we're going to need it by, say, June 1st or something like that, which may be too late for them to plant crops, but they get a guaranteed source of income. And then when San Diego or whoever does need it, they pay a pretty good price per acre.
So they're like first in line.
Yeah, well, they may.
If needed.
If needed. And they might pay, you know, for metropolitan uses, a couple of $1,000 an acre foot. You know, the farmer might be getting it from the Central Valley Project for $10 to $100 an acre foot. So there's a tidy profit in there.
Why plant? Yeah, exactly.
So that's fallowing of agricultural land is a way to generate a lot of water quickly on a short term without building infrastructure. And so there's
until you want to go to the grocery store.
Until you want to go to the grocery store.
Or pick it fresh. Okay, the farm fresh stuff. So with that kind of as a backdrop, the situation that the water district is in here, knowing that they're going to be pressures to take, knowing that we don't have a lot of agricultural concerns, legal agricultural concerns locally that have got these contracts, does that put us in an odd man out, or does that put us in a leadership position?
Well, I think we're in control of our own destiny as far as we own all the infrastructure to hold and deliver the water. We're not beholden to the state or federal government. It's ours. It's the Humboldt Bay's infrastructure. You know, the thing that's different for us is we're not plumbed in. And so we can't start, we can't horse trade like everybody else does, you know, because while we have our hose
doesn't go there.
Our hose doesn't go there yet, you know. And so if we can figure a method of conveying the water from here to there, then we would be, you know, in a good position as a water broker. But, I mean, after all, we were selling 60 million gallons a day to the pulp mills. And so we could sell that 60 million gallons to anybody else who wants it. If they take delivery of it, we'd love you to sell it to you. You know, we need the money to to rebuild our infrastructure.
What is the demand out there for water? You talked about LA. Well, until Star Trek becomes a reality, that's going to be tough to get water down there just pronto. Who's out there that really needs it?
There's a lot of places that need it. Like I was saying, you know, most of the big agencies have water portfolios, and they get water from recycling, conservation programs, whether they're trading contracts with agricultural producers or others. They're always looking for multiple sources, and particularly now with climate change and greenhouse gas and energy efficiency for carbon trading, you know, they're looking for alternative sources of water that don't rely on the same kind of energy consumption to be delivered. And so if they could tap into us and say, well, when we're in a drought situation, you guys are never in a drought situation up in Humboldt, generally. You always have the water. You're not like San Joaquin Valley.
Or if we are, it's relative to what we normally have.
Relative. Yeah. So, you know, in that sense, I think we have a lot to offer for other people's water portfolios, is that we are a reliable source, you know, of X number of acre feet, depending on what they want. And that, I think, makes probably a lot of water managers feel a lot better knowing they have some, you know, reliability out there instead of the uncertainty.
But with the trick being the delivery system then.
Yeah.
I would suppose even if Richardson's Grove was straightened out, we could use the trucks everybody else is using. That probably still isn't going to get the job done unless somebody really is in a desperate strait.
I think the only two physical means of transporting the water is, one is a pipeline, and two would be by container ship, marine transport.
The baggie? Or are you talking about in the hull?
It could be in the hull, could be in a bag, whatever the technology is, but essentially putting it in a boat and taking it down to the bay area and offloading it at a marine terminal, and then it becomes part of the plumbing system, you know, the bay area, and they can...
It really becomes a marine terminal then, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like I said, we can build... that's what they do all over the country, is they build pipelines and they take water from one point and deliver it to another point.
That's why I was kind of curious with some of the discussions. Doesn't LA have a big old pipe out of the Colorado that's going to be turned off or shut down? Or
yeah, they have.
So it has been employed in a couple of different situations, and yet are we that far away that it's not practical? Or
no.
Is it just today's cost of labor, of land, of some of these other things in combination with the distance that makes it really tough for us just to run a pipe to, well, like they did with Whiskey Town in Shasta?
Right. Well, it definitely, you know, the cost is going to be the dominant factor. And I don't know what it would cost per mile, you know, to run, you know, a 2-foot diameter pipe. But obviously we would...
Is that it?
I don't know.
Just a 2-foot pipe?
I don't think we would need, you know, huge. It depends on how much we're delivering. But, you know, I don't think... We're replacing water lines right now over... down on the Samoa Peninsula, and we're replacing an 18-inch line with a 24-inch line, and that's the water that comes to the Humboldt Community Services District through the bay. So I just, you know, I'm not an engineer. I don't know if 2 feet
is too small.
I had visions
of 4 and 6 and 8 and 10-foot.
I think that depending on the volume, 2 feet or 4 feet, and I don't know what the price difference is really in the size of the pipe, or is it mostly the right-of-way and the trenching and all that other stuff. But running a pipeline south, you know, till we tie into, say, the Potter Valley project, you know, replace the Eel as the supply, the MAD becomes the supply. I don't know what that would cost. I don't know how much Sonoma County Water Agency would value that kind of water.
That's right, yeah. And it would be paid on a water contract let today instead of 120 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be paid. But, you know, you figure what's the cost of the water going to be 50 or 100 years from now?
How about just evaporation?
Right. If you put it in a pipeline, you don't have evaporation like you do with the canals. And that's what the state and the Central Valley Project are. They're in canals. So,
is there any discussion to change that? Either run a tube in the canal so that you lose the
loss? I mean, there's a tremendous loss to evapotranspiration, you know, and with the temperature going up in the San Joaquin, I mean, that's one of the hottest spots in California.
Or the contamination potential.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can't protect the whole thing if somebody wanted to go goofy.
Right. No, the pipeline's a lot safer than a canal, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't know that they've explored that. You know,
does a canal leak?
It probably does. They're lined. These aren't unlined canals. There are unlined canals. That was the typical irrigation way of 100 years ago, but most people have lined them just because they lose so much water from the point of diversion to the point of use.
It would make sense. You know, that would be that constant. That would be some conservation. I think everybody gets, yes, stands behind on that one. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:42. We'll be back with more from Alderon Laird.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
3:21, Mark. Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:47. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Alderon Laird. Alderon, looking at the concept of what the future of water policy might be, I can't believe it's going to be hammered out in a political vacuum. Somebody's going to be doing it for reasons that we may never really understand. Okay, and lobbyists. Okay, I mean, all the normal tensions that are there. What do you see in 25 years?
Well, we're going to have a lot more people, you know. I think it's going to be a lot hotter, you know. So I think we're going to have a lot less snow melt, you know. So the water is going to be coming down more as rain. And, you know, I think we're losing the largest reservoir in California, which is the snowpack of the Sierra Nevadas. And we can't replace that by building a few dams. And so I think we're going to have using water more efficiently, you know, squeezing as much as we can get out of every drop and reusing the water, recycling the water. I think that's going to advance to a fine art because we have the water, you know, and to waste the water, you know, is actually unconstitutional to waste water. And I think that we'll really start emphasizing that it's expensive and it's short supply. And so we can't afford to be, you know, watering lawns, you know, in Palm Springs, maybe, you know, or...
Does desalinization enter into it at all, or is that too costly?
No, it is entering. In fact, San Diego, realizing they were probably going to be losing, you know, some of the water from the Colorado River, you know, when that gets renegotiated, have went forward with the Poseidon desalination plant that just being built right now. And I think that's going to supply upwards of about 20% of their water supply by 2025, 2030.
So much more common on the coasts?
It is common on the coasts. The big thing of it is it needs a huge energy source. You know, it's a big energy.
So locate a nuclear plant right next to it?
Located right next to a power plant. And that also provided infrastructure like outfall pipes.
That's what I was saying. Yeah, the two kind of are the same, same thing, just different product.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, we're going to see more desalination. I think the cost is going to come down as technology advances with it. It'll be probably more energy efficient. Right now it's running around $2,500 an acre foot, you know, but 50 years from now, $2,500 an acre foot might look like a pretty good deal.
That's farmer money.
That's
See, I was listening earlier in the show, baby. Yeah.
Good.
Do you think there's going to be a significant change in our part of the state?
In our part of the state, no, I don't think. We're not really dependent on a snowpack for our water supply. You know, most of our watershed is forested. You know, the big threat to our water supply in the Mad River and in the future will be if we have more forest fires, you know, that cover larger areas and we lose the forest cover. The forest cover is really the sponge that holds the water for us.
So more managing of the forests, kind of like what used to happen.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
We need to protect that forest cover, but we'll probably, the Mad River will become, I think, somewhat of a cold water refugia or a place for salmon and steelhead, where the other rivers during the summer are heating up or going intermittent in flow. Because we use the Mad River as our pipeline, the fish get the benefit, you know, by the water that's going down. And so I think that we've got a good system that's really going to stand out in the future.
Thanks for coming by.
You're welcome.
Enjoy your weekend. We've been Talking Shop this afternoon with Alderon Laird. Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow morning.